Greenville to Havertown, Indiana to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the state's major business groups are calling on Governor Tom Wolf to return more than $1 million in campaign contributions from a political action committee with deep ties to a lawyer-doctor-pharmacy scheme. David Taylor is joined by Kevin Shivers and Matthew Briette for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And Democratic chances of winning a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives are improving, and self-inflicted wounds by Pennsylvania Republicans are helping their cause. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Preborn babies with a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome will be protected if a bill passed by the State House of Representatives this past week becomes law. Maria Gallagher of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation hailed passage of the bill, saying, quote, "Their lives should be protected." Gallagher added that, quote, "People with Down syndrome contribute greatly to our families, workplaces, and communities." Under current state law, a woman can have an abortion prior to 24 weeks for any reason except sex selection. The House bill would add Down syndrome as a prohibited reason for having an abortion. To become law, the bill must still be signed into law by Governor Tom Wolf. Republicans are becoming concerned over the increasingly nasty tone of the race for the party's gubernatorial nomination. The air war between State Senator Scott Wagner and Pittsburgh businessman Paul Mango has gotten increasingly personal. Wagner's daughter, Catherine, appears in a new ad debunking Mango's allegation that Wagner was a, quote, "deadbeat dad." While it is not unusual for candidates in hotly fought primaries to attack each other, the gubernatorial race has been marked by personal rather than policy attacks. A third candidate, Laura Ellsworth, has refrained from attack ads, hoping to benefit from the other two candidates' attacks on each other. The primary is May 15th, and the winner will face incumbent Democratic Governor Tom Wolf in the November general election. Meanwhile, the Republican Party of Pennsylvania has filed a right-to-know request seeking to determine if there was collusion between Governor Wolf's office and Democratic Pennsylvania State Supreme Court justices and several political action committees stemming from the recent implementation by judicial fiat of new congressional district maps in the state. Recent reports that the National Democratic Redistricting Committee PAC donated $250,000 to Governor Wolf's reelection have raised red flags. The new maps were gerrymandered by the High Court to favor Democrats in this year's midterm elections. Read about all things Pennsylvania at the all-new patownhall.com. The Philadelphia Inquirer has exposed a lawyer-doctor-pharmacy scheme that has funneled millions of dollars into a political action committee, which in turn has contributed heavily to the reelection of Governor Tom Wolf. Our Capitol Watch crew is here with details. Matthew Briette and Kevin Shivers join host David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Matt Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners, the Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you, David.
Also with us here, Kevin Shivers, Executive State Director for the National Federation of Business from Pennsylvania. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you again, David.
Well, we find ourselves at another sort of crisis point in Harrisburg, that we have the governor who has declared a state of emergency regarding opioid addiction, heroin and fentanyl, a real what the governor describes as being a public health emergency. And yet, at the same time, there are also public policy reforms that could be enacted that would lessen that crisis that the governor doesn't support. How can that be?
Well, unfortunately, David, it appears that there's been, money in politics that is driving some of the changes of heart or policy agendas. And I know Kevin has some experience with that, precisely of where the governor has flip-flopped. But David, we should commend the governor for recognizing the public health crisis that we are in from opioid abuse and really the overprescription of opioids for legitimate pain reasons that has unfortunately led to addictions in many people that they turn to very dangerous drugs. But it's really hard to believe that the governor is opposing an effort that would clearly reduce overprescription of opioids in Pennsylvania. And it seems to be at the behest of one of his biggest campaign contributors. And this while at the same time, Governor Wolf is saying we need to address campaign finance reform and get special interest money out of politics. And it just seems like it's this snowball of exacerbating the opioid crisis along with really egregious monies that have been, in effect, laundered into politics.
Yeah. So, Kevin, this relates to the workers' compensation system. Can you just like give a quick overview? What is workers' compensation and what is the issue at stake here?
Yeah, sure. For our listeners, you know, you're working on the job and you get hurt. Pennsylvania law is such that we want you to not only be treated for your injury, but also compensated for your injury and also be able to return to the workforce as quickly as possible to make you better again.
And that's why there's an insurance system that's in place that employers pay into to make sure that employees are covered on the job.
That's exactly right. And treating injured workers, it costs money. Medicines and other things. And one of the ways that we've been able to help keep costs down in other areas of healthcare is to come up with accepted, nationally accepted method standards for treatment of care so that we don't overuse medications, that we can help keep costs reasonably well.
And that we make sure
a drug formula.
Right. And it makes sure that the treatments that are prescribed or put in place are actually effective.
That's exactly right. And there
so people
was
get well.
A Philadelphia inquiry, a series, an expose that was conducted where we're finding that that's just not the case, that the paper's alleging there's a law firm in Philadelphia that had a financial relationship with a pharmacy, which was referring patients to a doctor who would then refer them to a pharmacy to have prescriptions filled. And what the Inquirer found was that you had $4 tubes of ointment that were being charged to the workers' compensation system for $4,000. So you have a dual problem here. You have a system, the workers' compensation system, where there are really no guardrails in terms of the kinds of and types of pain medications that are being prescribed to injured workers. And there's a concern because 2 in 10 Pennsylvanians in our workers' comp system will wind up with some type of long-term use of any type of an opioid. And our workers' comp system has the second highest prescriptions of opioids of any other workers' compensation system in the country.
And again, just wanting to give the listeners some context here. So when we talk about having a formulary, having a set of standard rules that are to be respected and that when you the doctor, want to prescribe or treat outside of those rules that you have to get special permission, or it's a safety standard, that this kind of system already is in place with Medicare, with Medicaid, with all private insurance policies. It's just that it doesn't exist in the workers' compensation system. And so as a result, that workers' comp, A, can get ripped off, and that B, that workers are endangered from getting drugs that are too powerful, getting them under the wrong circumstances when they're not necessary, and also getting them in higher doses and getting more pills than they need. And all these things expose Pennsylvania's injured workers to addiction.
And I think what's worse, David, is that the Philadelphia Inquirer story revealed that some of these pain medications, that there is no medical efficacy. The medical community has not been able to establish that these ointments,
the compound creams
yeah, that they're using, are even beneficial. And
right.
So if I'm an injured worker, the idea that I could be prescribed a medicine that really won't treat my ailment, that won't get me back to work or feeling better anytime sooner, that knowing that my employer is being abused with a $4,000 bill for a $4 tube of this ointment, and knowing how perfectly legal it all is, as a taxpayer, as a consumer, as a family, I would just jaw-dropping.
Well, and this is the thing, that the legislative remedy is moving in Harrisburg. It's Senate Bill 936. It has passed the Senate. Other states have adopted these kinds of reforms. And in fact, that Jerry Brown, the governor of California, and Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York State.
Conservative icons.
No, they're not. The opposite. They are the opposite of that. Yeah. And yet, because this issue shouldn't be, or at least ought not to be, Democrat, Republican, business, labor, liberal, conservative, that you have these liberal governors sign these kinds of reforms into law. And yet, Governor Wolf won't support this reform that would protect injured workers from being addicted, because it would also stop the fraud. And if the fraud stops, Matt, what happens then?
Well, that's where this funding scheme, that it appears that Governor Wolf has been the prime beneficiary of this $4,000 cream, is that law firms like Pond Lahaki that have now given the governor hundreds of thousands of dollars, given money to a political action committee that includes lots of these doctor, lawyer, pharmacy schemes that have been concocted. Fairness PA, a political action committee, has given a total of $1.1 million to Governor Wolf. It appears that this is what is driving his opposition to this simple reform.
Yes.
And it is unfortunate because, again, it really exposes, I think, his hypocrisy on special interest money, because this is clearly special interest money, as well as his at least public proclamation that he wants to tackle the opioid crisis head on, while knowing that these reforms in other states have helped to mitigate the opioid over-prescription and abuse that's going on in states.
And I think any person in this state who's concerned about this addiction, and it's horrible. I mean, you're taking a look at some parts of the state, the death rates because of this, and the
thousands
number
of people
families.
Dying.
And to all of a sudden just play politics with this workers' comp process, you know, because this is about a group of attorneys and labor leaders and others who they just want the win. They don't want the good policy. They want the win. And the idea is, if we can beat back this type of reform, that makes us all better.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Kevin Shivers from NFIB Pennsylvania and Matt Briett from Commonwealth Partners. And so that brings us to the actual news of the day, which is that a coalition of business leaders, including the three of us, has called on Governor Wolf to give back the $1.1 million that he has taken from this political action committee that's funded by the insurance scammers.
And let's just set this up for a minute. Last month, Dave, the governor held a big news conference. You know, we had to shine a bright light of transparency on the way our campaigns and politics were funded in this state. And, you know, the governor went to great lengths to talk about how he, you know, was leading the effort where no one has led the effort before. We're going to shine that bright light on our political system, our campaign finance system, and, you know, we're going to cap the amount of money that can be donated or spent, and we're going to add additional disclosure. But, you know, as you just pointed out, all the while he was taking, you know, $1 million from the supporters of this kind of bad legislation. And, you know, it just reminds me of that old, the old adage about, you know, talking the talk but walking the walk. And, you know, clearly this is a place where, you know, the governor is talking, but he's certainly not walking.
Well, I mean, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised. Obviously, you know, we've seen the political process in Harrisburg close up for a long time, and it can be a really tawdry business. We never expect it. We never accept it. But unfortunately, we see it far too often. But I think, Matt, that this is an especially grating kind of disconnect, that at the same time that you have the governor receiving, you know, it's at hundreds of thousands of dollars from John Dougherty, a.k.a. Johnny Doc, union boss from Philadelphia, recently raided by the FBI and the IRS, that somehow it would seem that those would not be the sorts of people that a reformer would want to be involved with.
Well, yeah, David, that's the narrative that Tom Wolfe ran on is outsider, businessman, a reformer. Yet here he's really engaging in the very same practices that, he condemns in other politicians that are in bed with special interests. I mean, he's going after Republicans daily with false ads on TV about the natural gas industry, one, not being taxed, and two, buying off politicians. Of course, the difference being that the gas industry just wants to be left alone, whereas these law firms like Pond Lahocki profit off of the schemes of government. And so they're looking to protect their profits.
Whereas the governor, when he ran as sort of the outsider businessman type candidate, that he put himself forward as being a reformer, and people would say a moderate. Well, in fact, he's proven himself to be the most left-wing governor in America. That appellation's been given before. But again, if he won't support a limit on lawsuit abuse that that Andrew Cuomo and Jerry Brown in good conscience could sign
saying he's against, he wants to fight the opioid crisis.
And also that it was only at the end of last year that he flew off to take a secret meeting in California with George Soros and Nancy Pelosi and the big funders behind the radical left in the U.S. And again, he didn't say where he was going. He didn't put that on his schedule. Right. And so that also begs the question about his commitment to transparency.
I just want to take issue with you for a moment, David. I don't think this is one of ideological bent with this governor. I think it's something worse because we've seen time and again from the first day the governor has been here how he has used the power of his office to meet vengeance against his political enemies. It goes all the way back to the inauguration when the governor would refuse to allow Yingling beer to be served at his inaugural celebration because Mr. Yingling had supported the other candidate. It goes back to when the governor receiving money from certain unions, public sector unions, attempted to unionize home care workers across the Commonwealth, which would have resulted in a gigantic state taxpayer-funded payday for these union bosses for that public sector union. But it goes even further than that. If you recall, in this reapportionment issue the gerrymandering case where our Supreme Court tossed our congressional boundaries and ordered the governor and the legislature to work together and come up with a new map, the legislature couldn't get the governor's support. And that was needed in order to satisfy the requirement of the Supreme Court. Otherwise, they would draw their own map. Well, we just learned that the governor received a $25,000 payment from Eric Holder and his group that seeks to
$250,000.
I forgot a zero. Thanks, Matt. I need to check my own notes here.
Zero?
But what's another zero among friends? But $250,000 from Eric Holder and his outfit to, because of their, interest in getting lines redrawn. And you have to wonder, what are the governor's motivations here? Because every time he collects a check, he certainly is, he's certainly putting his level in best into either advocating that policy or holding back on that policy. That's the concern that we see here with the Senate Bill 936, the amount of money the governor has received and the efforts on the part of this administration. What's frustrating is the administration actually wasn't all that opposed to this actual legislation, prior to, the governor, getting involved, and suddenly they reversed course. They were actually for it before they were against it, which it's sort of extraordinary.
If he were to return that $1.1 million, I think we could take him seriously. But if he keeps this money and continues to be opposed to common sense reforms of the workman's comp system, I think we have to, take him for how his actions demonstrate him to be rather than his words, because he's talking the talk. He's definitely not walking the walk right now, and that's very disappointing. I think people were expecting a lot more from him. They're not getting that right now.
Well, and again, it returns to the seriousness of the underlying question that in the United States in 2016, 63,600 Americans died of overdose, and that this opioid addiction it really is an epidemic, and the governor is correct to declare it a public health emergency. But Pennsylvania having a higher rate of addiction among injured workers, among people being treated through the workman's compensation system, this is an area where Harrisburg needs to step in. This is a state program. It is the responsibility of state government to make sure that this program is managed properly so as to reduce those risks to injured workers to be overprescribed, to become addicted, and God forbid, to overdose.
Now, I know both of you guys have been working on this issue in the Capitol. Are there any legitimate reasons to be opposed to this reform to the workman's comp system? I mean, is there anything that you're getting pushback on and said, well, that's a good point? Or is this just hardball politics of people who profit from the status quo and fighting against the reforms?
They come up with excuses, but none of them are legit. We have answers to all of them. None of these excuses, evasions, are real. And it's really because, Matt, it is the latter. This is hardball politics. It's all about power and money. And sadly, that's why not a single member of the House Democrat Caucus has supported this important legislation. Well, that's all the time that we have for this program. But Kevin, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
They can visit nfib.com/PA, or they can join the conversation on Twitter at @NFIB_PA.
And Matt, where do people find you?
Hey, the best place to join us is at facebook.com/CommonwealthPartners.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. From Kevin and Matt and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. There is no problem in which the Republican Party finds itself that it can't make worse. Such is the case with GOP efforts to defend an increasingly frail majority in the United States House of Representatives. Only one-third of the U.S. Senate is up for election this year, and with twice as many Democratic as Republican seats in play, the grand old party seems likely to maintain, perhaps even increase, its one-seat majority. But all 435 seats in the House of Representatives will be voted upon this November. Republicans currently hold a 44-seat advantage with five vacancies. All else being equal, Democrats need only flip 24 seats to gain majority control. That is a slim margin, given the historic propensity of voters to hand the party of a new president substantial losses in his first midterm election. Democrats lost 63 seats in President Barack Obama's first midterm, and Republicans have controlled the chamber ever since. Republicans, therefore, must buck history to forestall substantial Democratic gains this November. To accomplish that, the GOP must do just about everything right. At the moment, it appears the party is doing nothing right, and good old Penns Woods has contributed mightily to their woes. Let us count the ways. First of all, tilt the playing field. Years ago, National Democrats realized they had no chance of regaining control of Congress, given the redistricting plans implemented in the several states. Rather than wait until 2021 and the next scheduled round of redistricting, they set about challenging existing plans in key states such as Wisconsin, North Carolina, and, yes, Pennsylvania. To ensure success, the Democrats and their labor union allies essentially purchased control of the state Supreme Court. With the unusual opportunity of three open seats on the court, labor unions poured millions into the 2015 statewide court races. The GOP was caught napping, and Democrats swept the election and claimed control of the high court. The investment paid off in a highly partisan and arguably unconstitutional action when the union-backed justices throughout the district maps developed through the regular order of business and by judicial fiat implemented their own map. The new districts, which visually appear to be compact, are more highly gerrymandered than the old and will likely result in a pickup of 4 to 5 congressional seats for the Democrats. And then there was that special election misfire, when a scandal forced the resignation of suburban Pittsburgh Congressman Tim Murphy. It looked like a sure bet Republicans would retain the seat. After all, President Trump carried the district by over 20 points in 2016. State Representative Rick Saccone was selected as the Republican nominee and proved to be a less-than-stellar campaigner. Rather than shore up his campaign, the GOP blame game began weeks before the March special election. Everyone seemed to forget Democrats held a 60,000-plus voter registration advantage in the district. The result was an embarrassing loss to Democrat Connor Lamb. And Republicans are a house divided. Congressional Republicans have spent more time fighting each other than engaging the Democrats. On any major vote, not a single Democrat will break ranks. But Republicans couldn't agree on the color of the White House. This triggered a populist uprising that in 2016 resulted in the election of President Donald Trump. The rise of Trump was fueled by so-called moderate Republicans like Congressman Charlie Dent, whose Tuesday group frustrated conservative voters. Trump rode the populist wave to an electoral victory in Pennsylvania, but he lost the populous Philadelphia suburbs by a landslide. Last year, the GOP sustained historic losses at the county level in that region. The president remains hugely unpopular in those collar counties, which means Republican congressmen in those regions will likely become an extinct species. And, of course, there is the Costello cop-out. Retirements, including the high-profile decision by House Speaker Paul Ryan to end his congressional career, further add to the steep hill the GOP must climb. To date, 40 Republican congressmen are either retiring or running for higher office. That is far above the historic average of 25 retirements per cycle. 5 Pennsylvania Republican congressmen have announced their retirements, the latest being Congressman Ryan Costello of Chester County. He bailed on the battle after the new district maps were put into place to avoid what would have been a tough re-election contest. The timing of his retirement, which came after other candidates would have had the opportunity to place their names on the ballot, leaves the party with but one unknown candidate. Thus, Pennsylvania has become the keystone state for Democratic efforts to reclaim control of the U.S. House of Representatives, and they are doing so with significant help from the GOP itself. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRJV-FM in Breezewood, WBXQ-FM in Altoona, along with WXTU-FM in Bella Cynwyd, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Thank you.